This is the news, according to me. Well, a fine top of the week, I tell ya. No, I'm not Irish. More Amish than Irish. Some kind of ish. Good Monday morning to you. Hope you had a great weekend. Lots of stuff happening. Lots of things happening. Lots of things not happening. We're going to talk about both the happening and the non-happening. Going to get right into it. December 21st, 2020. That's right. 12/21/2020. So here we are. Over the weekend, there was a broadcast on YouTube, of all places. Turning Point USA was on. They did a great job. Also like to welcome a new follower I've got on. I'm very honored, actually, to have a follower on the podcast, or on Parler, which is where it's where I usually post my podcast. If you're not listening to it on iTunes, or you don't see me on the Facebook channel, you're probably listening on Parler. Most people are listening from Parler, and I really appreciate that. And a fellow by the name of Josh Bernstein, is following me now. He is he's a rising star on YouTube, and nobody's a rising star anymore that's a conservative on YouTube, I guess, because we're all being demoted. It happened to me a long time ago, and I kind of got out of it altogether. I got a different strategy now to use YouTube for a marketing tool, but that's all. We'll have to see if that works. Just started doing it last week. But let's get back to the news. Anyway, thanks. Welcome, Josh Bernstein to the followers there on Parler. And if you can, like and share this. If you can share this this post, if you can share this, echo this post, if you can share the podcast with other people, subscribe to it. I really appreciate it. Even if you never listen to it, it really helps me out. So not financially in any way, just helps me kind of get the podcast out there and gives people a platform and a place to share ideas and thoughts. I am a conservative libertarian. I would call myself more. I do not align with the Libertarian Party hardly at all. It's just a bunch of crazy people there. It's like, I think I'm not a huge Glenn Beck fan. I used to be, but one of the things he used to say is trying to get libertarians together is kind of like herding cats, and it's very true. There's such a wide variety of libertarians. Some people really give them a bad rap. I was more of a Ron Paul, conservative libertarian type guy. And so I've pretty much always kind of stayed with the Republican. The third party thing just doesn't work in this country the way the rules are set up. It's a joke. So it's really just, it's a matter of kind of voting for policy more than anything. And typically the Republican Party, at least in word, if not in deed, they at least say they believe the same things I do. Sorry, I had to take a sip there because my throat's getting bad. So Turning Point USA over the weekend had some really good speakers, had a really good job, did a really good job. Veritas Project, Mr. James O'Keefe did a presentation. It was excellent. Michael Knowles did a little speech, and it was a missile. It was a very good truth bomb kind of thing. He just came out and spoke. No big show, just spoke, and it was excellently executed speech. Just things like that. Just very, very good thing. But let's get into what's going on with the news. Now, since last week, of course, last Friday was the big day for the 45 days after the election, the whole DNI thing and the ODNI report was supposed to come out. And of course, we didn't hear anything. It was just pretty much just, that kind of thing. Yeah. However, there was some stuff going on behind the scenes, and it's interesting that the chess game that is being played right now is really it's just an incredible thing. If you're watching what's going on behind the scenes, and a lot of this has to do with Hunter Biden, with Bill Barr, with all the intelligence agencies, the DOJ, the DOD, everything is happening right now. If And there's just all this bubbling going on in the pot that it's hard to tell what it's going to look like after it's boiled. You know, it's what's cooking in there. I don't know. It's hard to tell. Got to get the lid on it. So of course that of course brings up a lot of speculation and a lot of conspiracy theory guys, you know, come out. And I hear a lot of people talking like, you know, well, we're going to go after it. If they don't do it, we're going to do it for them. Well, I accept that. I realize that. I understand that. That's got to be done, you know, in an orchestrated way as well. Or it can't just be willy-nilly, you know, a group of you and your friends going out trying to, you know, like do something stupid, like kidnap the governor of Michigan or something. That's, you guys are nuts. So, I mean, I understand their passion. Don't get me wrong, but it's just, you know, it's executed in a very wrong way. And there's ways to go about this stuff to hold, you know, government accountable without doing that kind of thing. So, anyway, so there's this, there was a really good report on the whole Turning Point TPUSA thing. A couple of doctors that were being, interviewed, and they brought up some very good points. And the one guy is a virologist, and the other lady was some kind of a doctor or something specialist in terms of vaccines. There is an interesting problem. It's called antibody dependent enhancement. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of that or not, but it's what you're doing is if you get the vaccine and then you end up getting COVID, the CV2 or the COVID-19 related illness. Now, I guess my understanding is 9 people who have had the vaccine have died. From COVID. That's what my understanding is. I don't know the details on all that. I know that, they may have been very close to have, you know, they may have been on their deathbed. They may have been on a ventilator. I don't know. And the vaccine just didn't have time to do its thing. Cause it does take a while for your body to respond and react. And some people's they're just too far gone. And, you know, they might have other symptoms as well. They might have other diseases. They might have cancer and they just happen to get COVID. And now they're trying to, you know, cure the COVID and the cancer got them. And I don't know. It's not enough details there in the numbers without, you know, to make any kind of decisions on this stuff. One of the interesting things that's going to happen is, you know, whether this vaccine is going to become mandatory. Will it become mandatory? Well, I don't know. I know that for some occupations, it probably will. Now, I am an airline pilot. I started flying for an airline back in 1999, and I left the airline for many years, and I went back because there was a pilot shortage in 2019, and 20 started in 2017, 2018. And they were begging people to come back to work. Well, I was a captain when I left, and so I decided I could go back. And by the time I got online, I was basically a captain again because I had all the qualifications and I was able to meet the standards. And they were moving people up so fast that I was able, before I got through training, I was by the time I got in the simulator, I was back in the captain position. So got online, was online for almost 2 years. And then, of course, March of 2020, they pretty much started halting everything. And so in April, I took a voluntary leave of absence. I was off work, basically, for the month of April. And I was glad I did. I got out of there with all the craziness that was going on. And because I just didn't know what to expect in April. I knew it was going to be crazy. And of course, everybody said I didn't miss anything because it was just nuts. And I missed a paycheck, but I'm doing the job because I enjoy doing it. I'm not doing it because I need the job. I've got other things I do. I've got a business of my own that does very well. And I would say it probably does better than what I do flying. And I was able to maintain my business while I was flying, but not to the degree. I couldn't grow the business like I was when I'm flying. I just can't grow the business. So I ended up. I need a little tea with honey here this morning. My voice is kind of scratchy. That's German. So I ended up going back to work then in May. Things had kind of settled down a little bit at that point, but I basically sat reserve for the whole month of May and didn't, I'm able to sit on my sailboat when I'm on reserve. That'd be within 2 hours of the airport. So I was able to sit on my boat for almost the whole month till the very last day of May. And then I flew one trip, one day, or as an out and back type thing. And then I ended up in June, I took off, I took a what's called a stay-at-home pay option. And then I had training in July, so I ended up working in July, just so because I had training anyway. So I went back to a normal schedule in July, but didn't do anything. And then I went through what's called downgrade training, which is I went back to flying in the right seat. I lost all my seniority when I had left. I went back to the same company I'd flown with before, but I'd lost all my seniority. So I, even though I was able to hold captain, when all this started happening, I started backflowing everybody and putting everybody kind of, you know, on the, they were getting ready, lining up everybody for October because they knew in October, that's when the government funding stopped and they were planning on laying everybody off. So everybody was realigning, the industry was downsizing. They basically moved a lot of people that were captains back to first officer positions, co-pilot positions. And then they ended up going back to, they ended up even closing some bases, some crew domiciles where we had crew domiciles. We went from 4 domiciles that we had in the Midwest, and we went down to 2, basically cut them in half. So all that happened at the end of July, and then I went into stay-at-home pay, and I also had vacation in August. And then in September, I ended up on I was also on stay-at-home pay, but I ended up they ended up putting me through my yearly training. This is just crazy stuff. Because starting October 1st, I was going to take a voluntary leave of absence. Or voluntary furlough. I had seniority enough to hold my position, but now that when I was going back through retraining and going through ground school, initial, what they call an indoc, this time, I was about the oldest guy in the class. Now, I wasn't the oldest guy, but I was the oldest guy that made it through class, put it that way. And a lot of younger guys in the class, a lot of younger guys at the company, and these guys are all just starting out in life. This is their only job. It's their only occupation. It's their only career. Most of them don't have second income. A lot of them have a wife and kids, or they're starting a family. And I cannot see myself taking a job that they need because I'm stepping in ahead of them. Most of these guys that were at least junior to me, I don't need the job. So it was all fun and games when I was there, when the pilots were in demand. And I didn't feel like I felt like I was helping the company, helping everybody out. Now it feels like I'm in the way because I'm in a job that I don't necessarily need. So that's a little bit about my story. So I'm choosing to stay on furlough as long as I can. We've got 120 pilots, I think, still on furlough at my company. I'm in a small, what's called feeder airline or a regional airline. And fly the small jets. So it's a tough situation for all those guys. And it's tough to be working right now. I mean, every state you go to, you know, you got overnights in different states. You've got different hotel rules in different states, restaurant rules. You never know where you're going to be able to get food, where you're not going to be able to get food, what's going to be shut down, what's going to be open. It's very difficult to be out on the road right now on a four or five day trip, and not know how you're going to eat. I mean, a lot of people are taking their own food and stuff with them now, but that's difficult because you got to keep your food for, you know, a few days. And it's just not a happy, fun place to work right now. Not that it's ever been, you know, it's always been a good job. The job itself has been good. It's just working, you know, the kind of life that you have to live. You have to be away from home all the time. And I miss my family, miss my dogs. But yeah, it's been craziness like that. So I have kind of avoided getting involved in the mess as well as taking somebody's position. So that's why I'm doing this. So, and I don't get paid for this either. So it's been an interesting argument about what's going to happen with the requirements. Now, if they start requiring people to take the vaccine, frankly, I'm not going to take it. I'm a healthy guy. I'm over 50 years old, but I'm definitely, you know, pretty high survival rate for guys like me. And I don't think there was some really good points made about people under 40 taking this vaccine. And the idea that people under 40 should take it is especially people under 25. If you're in your childbearing years, do not, this is my opinion, do not take this virus or this vaccine. It is a virus. Do not take the vaccine because here's what we don't know. We don't know what it's doing to birth defects. So have your kids before you take this vaccine. There are some things about this thing that are just unknown, and everybody's rushing to take a vaccine all at once. You know, normally when people take vaccines, they take them when they're kids, and that's there's this gradual incrementation into society of these people taking vaccines. And there's whether you're a non-vaxxer or what you are, anti-vax, whatever you are. I'm not, but it's at the same time I'm not. Let's just say I'm a little skeptical, suspicious about it, but just the same. Everybody all at once in the entire planet taking this thing. And then all of a sudden, what do we find out in 6 months from now or a year from now, 9 months from now, when, you know, people start having kids and we start having issues or some kind of strange cancer comes from this whole thing. Lawyers are going to love that. So it's one of those things that, you know, I hate to draw this out any longer than it needs to be. I know I'm going kind of long on this particular subject. But it was a really good topic, and they had some really good discussion about this whole thing. So I think that hopefully we will not get in this country, we'll not get to the point where we have a mandatory vaccination process for this thing. If you're under 40, your survival rate is 99.98%. 99.98% under 40. That's better than the flu. And that's without the vaccination. So now the question is, whether or not that particular demographic of society will continue to keep the virus going and it will stay in the community and mutate and cause all kinds of other issues. And then here we go again. So should the vaccine be taken so that we annihilate it initially? But I don't think we're going to annihilate it. It's one of those things where it's kind of like we're not going – if you try to go there and try to annihilate this thing, we tried that with, back in March when we had the 14-day lockdown that is still going on. And so it's just a craziness, I think, within our society to think that a virus that we're going to be able to just – close everybody off in a bubble for 2 weeks and get rid of it. They call it break the chain. Well, there's no way to break that chain. I mean, you might be able to break the chain for 2 weeks, but most of the people on the planet aren't, and it's still going to be in society. As soon as you open up the door, it's going to be there again. So I just don't think that we are thinking clearly about all this, thinking clearly and logically. So a few more points about what happened over the weekend. Of course, in the last Friday, let's go back to the Friday thing. So there's this chess game being played out. And here's how I see it. We've got Hunter Biden, who is going through all this stuff. And the news media initially before the election was not allowing any news coverage of it. In fact, they were disinformation. It's not just that they didn't say anything about it. It's that they, when they did say something about it, they were saying it was debunked It was Russian propaganda. Okay, they were just flat out lying about it. And, oh, the computer, the laptop wasn't even, it was from Russia. That wasn't, you know, this whole story was just all conspiracy theory. Now, all of a sudden, there is an investigation. And all of a sudden, after the election, the news media starts opening up on Biden and going after him. Now, this is a touchy situation for them, because if they go after him too hard, then they have some splaining to do, because they have all the issues of prior to the election. Of course, they also have the issue of what if he gets indicted before he gets sworn in, supposedly on the 20th of January. What if he gets indicted next week? What if Joe Biden gets indicted? Because see, here's the problem. You've got someone at the middle of this whole thing. You've got not just Hunter Biden being under investigation. You also have Joe's brother involved in an investigation, and some other relatives that are involved in investigations around this whole circle. Who's in the middle of all this? Who's the kingpin of this whole thing? It's Joe. And so to say that Joe is not a part of this, or Joe, you know, didn't know anything about it, or that he's innocent in any of this, is ridiculous. They're using Joe's influence. Even if he wasn't the vice president, he still was the vice president after 2016. And he still has a lot of influence within the government. He's got all the connections, and some of the recordings that have come out, some of the videos come out of the Japanese or the Chinese people, the leadership in CCP was talking about how they have friends in high places, and now those people are back in power again. Look at the cabinet that Joe is putting together to be in his cabinet. All those things. I mean, it's just an interesting game of craziness. And you got the Swalwell issue, and now he's finally come out and said, yes, he did have a relationship with the spy Fang Fang. So just all this stuff is happening, and it's just getting crazy. Now, behind the scenes and behind all of that, now you have Sidney Powell, who has gone to a meeting with the president along with Michael Flynn. And they are pushing, what I have understood of what the conversation is about, they are pushing for basically to enact the Insurrection Act. That some people say that means martial law. I don't know if that takes, it is a temporary thing. It can be done for a short period of time. There would be limited martial law in some places, probably. But Trump himself over the weekend has come out and said, no martial law, that's fake news. I don't think he's considering that as an option at this point. However, there are a lot of other things going on. I know that the Texas case that went before the Supreme Court was filed under Article 2 of the Constitution. Now it's being filed under Article 3. It's very quiet, but they're doing it again. I don't know if the SCOTUS will, put up with it or not, or if they'll come out with that or not, whether they're going to hear it this time or not. I'll tell you what, I don't know what kind of power John Roberts has and why he has power over or some kind of authority over the other justices, mainly Barrett and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. But I trust, so if those three went along with Thomas and Alito, that would be five right there. They would hear the case. It would be over with. This idea that supposedly John Roberts, and I haven't heard his response. Apparently he did make a response, and I haven't heard it yet. I don't know what it is to this whole thing that he told him that there wasn't riots back in 2000. That's why we're not going to take this case, because we're not going to decide the president, because it will cause riots. Boo-hoo. The leftist's head will pop off and there will be riots. There will be things being burned down in this country. We cannot give in to that kind of insanity. And when a parent has a child going through junior high that's throwing a fits and rebelling, you don't just let the child get away with you need to pick your battles sometimes, but you can't just let them get away with that. There's got to be and it should have been stopped when they were two. Because that's when it starts to manifest, is when they get to be 12. But it's one of those things where if you if you let this go, where does that lead? Where does that go down the road? If you either stop it now, face the issue now, deal with the riots. Now, why would he be afraid of riots if he takes the case? Because he knows the case is going to win. If you thought the case wasn't going to make it, or that there wasn't going to be a decision that would cause riots, then you would take the case and just go through it and then take it all apart and show why it's not, you know, why Biden won. But that's not the case. He's afraid of this thing passing. He doesn't want to take it because there will be riots. Now, there's two cases right now before this SCOTUS. One is the refiled case from Texas. Of course, now SCOTUS probably won't hear the case until February. There is the second case that now Sidney Powell has put up. And I don't know if it's just one case or if she has two separate cases that she's put up. But I know she has put a case now before the SCOTUS as well with an emergency thing. And they throw all this stuff about the Supreme Court out there all the time in the news. And sometimes some of the reports I hear are they'll say Supreme Court and then I find out, oh, it was the Georgia Supreme Court, Georgia State Supreme Court, not SCOTUS, not the Supreme Court of the United States. I believe that she has one before the SCOTUS of, you know, the U.S. SCOTUS, which is a part of SCOTUS. And I think that there's also a couple of them, like Pennsylvania and Georgia, where they're going before the state Supreme Courts as well. Now, I did find out something over the weekend about the whole thing of, this is another part of the puzzle. Sorry. Another part of the puzzle is we have the whole thing on January 6th, where we may have an objection from a senator and a congressman and a person in the House, representative. Apparently, there are some who are saying they will. I know Jim Jordan has said he would. There are others in the House that have said that they would stand up and contest the electors on January 6th. And there is at least one senator that will do that that is committed to doing that in the Senate. Now, Mitch McConnell will punish that person forever if they do it, which I think is, you know, okay, go ahead and be a bully, Mitch. It just shows your childishness, in my opinion. And then you've got other senators, and my understanding is that this was a Republican senator on an interview said something about this this was the most, she said, this was the most, I think it was her name was Shaheen, S-H-A-H-E-E-N, Shaheen, I don't know. She said that this was the most secure election of all times, basically saying it was, you know, the least fraudulent, most secure election of all time, of all history of U.S., basically. How you can look at things just point blank and then say something like that, it just blows my mind. But she went on from there and she basically said that anyone who questions this election is an enemy to the country, is an enemy to democracy, is degrading the integrity of our election system, because we're calling into question the election, therefore we are degrading the confidence in the election system, and we are guilty, she said, borderline treason. That was the term she used. I will have you know, if she would have said those things from the floor, from the chamber, if I would have been there as a representative, I would have let you know, I don't care about decorum at that point. I would have gotten up and said, you are threatening me with the penalty of death, because that's what treason is. The death penalty is what you get for treason. These people get up sometimes. This is what aggravates me about some of the representatives we have in Senate and in House. They get up and say things that they have their opinions, and they like to get up and speak their opinions. What they seem to forget every day when they get up there to make those speeches is that they are speaking not for themselves. They are speaking for me. They're representing me when they're up there. If they're my representative, if I voted for them to go represent me, they're representing me. If they're up there speaking stupid stuff like that, saying things like that, making threats to other senators for questioning the integrity, for being skeptical about the integrity of the election, which I think everyone should be, I think that's more patriotic. That's my opinion. So I'm guilty of treason because I'm saying I want free and fair elections. I want integrity in our election system. That's supposedly supposed to be somehow anti-patriotic. That's treasonous. You've got to be kidding me. No, you're not kidding me. So that's where this is at this point. Making statements like that really aggravate me because they're making statements about other representatives of other states. So the New Hampshire representative says something like that. If my representative in my state, which is all I hear from my state representative, is... nothing. They're not saying anything, even though I've written them letters and said, where do you stand on this issue? No response. No letters, no nothing. No vocal, no nothing. We need to work on military service people rights, to work on helping out our veterans. That's all I hear. So there's that. And it's one of those things where you've got all this squabbling going on. And here's the deal with a republic. This is how it's supposed to work. And this isn't Topical Tuesday. We might get into this tomorrow a little bit more. The republic is supposed to work based on I have rights as an individual. I elect a representative to go to Congress and protect those rights. Not to try to make new rights or try to give me stuff or vote you in to get me more stuff. I need rights to protect me from the government and from other encroaching entities like corporatism, statism, all those other things. I want to be able to live my life and not be subject to another person or another entity. I'm not a subject. I'm a sovereign. That is where we have a problem. We have a disconnect with our current government and our representatives right now. They think that they're supposed to be kings and lead us and guide us and be our parents, basically. And that's not what the government's role at all. Not at all. But we'll get into that more tomorrow. And that, of course, that has a lot to do with liberty and responsibility. Because with great liberty comes great responsibility. And a sovereign nation, a truly sovereign nation, is a nation that's made up of truly sovereign individuals, not groups, not mob rule, not the PC police, but individuals self-governing from within. And that's what our nation was founded on. And that's, unfortunately, we may have lost that because we have not educated an entire generation to take responsibility for themselves. So that's my rant for the day. So the chess game that's going on is playing out in the Hunter Biden drama. A lot of different angles there. We might get into that more. I might have another show later today and talk about that a little bit more. But this show is getting a little bit long. I didn't realize I've gone so long on my rant here this today. But so we'll talk about that some more. Let me know your comments and ask questions, and maybe we'll get into some of that, talk about some headlines and what's going on today in the news. Lady who fainted taking the vaccine and some of the other things that are going on. We'll dig down a little deeper in some of these topics and see what's happening. So once again, thanks for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for, giving me a like on Facebook or if you're on Parler. Later this week, I'll be getting on Rumble as well. Probably doing some video as well as the audio thing eventually. Yeah, that's about it for today. And I appreciate everybody's time and attention. Appreciate you sharing, liking, and appreciate everybody being all you patriots out there caring about our country. So, once again, God bless you. God bless this country, our leadership. Help us to bow before the cross Because when you're before the cross, it doesn't matter what color your skin is or what you look like or what your gender is. We're just all on the same level.